Hi, today is May 23rd, 2015. This is Mobile Views Podcast number 117. I think it's a prime number. Sounds like a prime number. Looks like a prime one. Must be one.
Prime enough for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a prime podcast. And that was John Westfall. I usually say my good friend John Westfall. Well, it's debatable today, I guess. But
I got demoted. Great. Just what I needed.
Okay. So we're going to start off this.
That Windows and 117 is not prime, unfortunately.
Oh, it's not?
But that, no, according to this prime numbers up to 1,000 that I just opened up.
Must be
up.
Divisible by, what, 3 or something?
Yeah, 113 is prime and 127 is prime, okay. But 117 is
this
not.
This is a non-prime podcast.
We'll plan for 127 to be very prime.
Really? I would have thought that's divisible by. No, I guess so, yeah, because. You'd be left with one. Okay, got it. All right.
Plenty more prime podcasts, though, before we reach 1,000.
Okay, well, this is not the first mess in this podcast. The next one is a big mess. That's one of my articles.
Well, there's three. That will be the third mess. The first mess was I was demoted from good to just, you know, frenemy. And the second one is we thought we had a prime number. And now you think that you want to use a working version of Windows 10, but apparently that's not the case.
Yeah. So I recently started writing for extremetech.com. Please go there and click on my articles. I don't get paid by the click, by the way, so that's not the point. But, you know, just so they know that people are reading it or at least clicking on it.
Ego. All about ego.
All about ego. And I don't know how many people click on it either, so, you know, it's fine. It's fine. It's fun. But yesterday, one of my articles went out, and it's titled, Microsoft Releases Windows 10 Build 1000. See, it's just a mess. Microsoft releases Windows 10 build 10,122 dash, and it's a giant mess. Now, my editor has fully admitted to changing my title, but which was originally, well, not originally, but what I suggested it should be is Microsoft Windows 10 build 10,122. What's new? What's better? What's broken? But, you know, this title drew a lot more interest, as you might imagine. And when I checked just before John and I started this podcast, it had 150 comments, including the one comment I made to address some of the, what's the word I want to use? Some of the less than happy responses to that title, mostly. Because in the article, I do complain about some of the issues I've run into in this build and in previous builds, but I don't call it a giant mess. And I should note that my editor apologized to me for renaming the title, but, you know, it doesn't matter to me. It really doesn't. It's good to know that people are actually reading the darn thing, you know? Not 150 people, by the way. Some people commented multiple times. But here's my thoughts on Windows 10 build 10,122. And, John, I know you're not testing Windows 10. At least you weren't the last time.
And if I had any thoughts to, I definitely am not now.
Okay, so here's a summary of what I was trying to get across, and it's this. Windows 10, when it first went into the technical preview back in, I think it was in August or September, was pretty darn good. I was really impressed. In fact, it was reasonably stable. It was not feature complete, but it was feature complete enough for me to be happy with. And for the most part, things worked pretty well, with the exception of Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi was a little spotty, but everything else, Bluetooth, all that worked fine. And in fact, one of the weird things was the mail app, you know, and I've never been a fan of Outlook, but this lighter weight mail app, the Metro app, for Windows 10 initial preview, was not only rock solid, it was the easiest IMAP setup I had ever done. I actually just gave in my email address. It figured out it was an IMAP server. Put in the right server, you know, SMTP IMAP four names, and set up the security correctly, and we were off and running. I could actually send email. It never happened before. Every other email client I've used, I've had to type in the server name, you know, switch it to SSL from, you know, plain text, and the, you know, usual stuff. This one did it really, really well. I was shocked and pleased. Since then, it's been downhill all the way. In fact, currently, the mail app doesn't work at all. in from what I can tell. Well, let me rephrase it. It works if you're using Outlook.com, a.k.a. Hotmail. If you're using any IMAP server, and I've tried two different IMAP servers, it doesn't work. It simply will not sync. It will let you set up the account and tell you that you've got to set up, but then it just won't sync any email at all. It's got lots and lots of problems, but you can read the article. It's on extremetech.com, and I'll put a link in the show notes so you can click directly to it from our mobileviews.com website where we post these podcasts. But in the case, to go on, you know, they've been switching the user interface around, moving things around, and that's okay. It's their operating system. They can do what they want. But the point is this. Word on the street is that Windows 10 is supposed to be released around the end of July. Now, Microsoft has never said that themselves, but they've not denied that either. What they have said is they'll release it this summer, which is up to, what is it, September 20th or thereof, where, you know, whenever the day before the first day of fall. So, but let's assume it's actually end of July. Well, actually, we can assume it's end of September, too. It doesn't really matter. At this point in previous beta releases, and I've been beta testing Windows releases since Windows 95, so it's over 20 years now. Windows 95 was a long beta. With a couple of months to go before a gold release or a, you know, penultimate release, the release that the internal testers at Microsoft bang on for quality control before they go gold, things have been stable by now. You know, this is the end of May. So if they're going to release in the end of July, they've only got 2 months left. Really, they've only got one month left before they have to feature freeze, send it to internal testers for internal banging and regression testing, and then, you know, release to manufacturers or, you know, whatever they're going to release to the public, people who want to upgrade. So this is a very late stage to still be making user interface changes, to still have, at least on my, you know, sample size, N equals 1, and, you know, I'm a statistician. I know N equals 1 is not the right sample size to make inferences from, but still, it's my sample size, and I'm still having problems. And in the past, I really haven't had problems at this late stage. In fact, I remember in the Windows 7 beta, I was so pleased at this point in time. I had already upgraded all my machines to Windows 7. I think I maybe kept one at XP just to make sure. I never did go to Vista. But I kept one at XP, you know, and that wasn't even my production machine. I kept like a netbook at XP just in case for emergencies. But Windows 7 was so rock solid, you know, 4 or 5 months before it was released that I had already moved everything up. There's no way I'm going to do that Windows 10. And that is what I'm trying to say, that there is something different, and I'm not sure what it is. My thinking, by the way, is despite what people are saying about a late July release, I think they have to go to September or maybe even later if they want to create something that's stable for everybody. Now, again, understanding I'm only N minus 1 or N equal, N equal 1, right?
There's no degrees of freedom here.
There are no degrees of freedom. Well, there's zero.
that's no.
that'll be null actually. it's a little bit late in the game to be making UI changes to have so much instability, even on one system. Unless I have a hardware problem, of course.
I'm going to make an argument, then okay, I'm going go to ahead. Refute my own argument, and okay. Then I'm going to make another argument. My first argument is that Windows 7 was, by and large, a refinement of Vista. Vista came out like a ton of bricks, knocked down a lot of people's houses, and then Windows 7 was kind of fixing the loose ends, and that's why I think it hit kind of that rock-solid stage so early. Windows 10, yeah, I'm going to refute myself now and say it should probably be the same thing about Windows 8. However, Windows 8, I think, was even a bigger departure from normalcy and stability than Vista was. So it doesn't really surprise me that they're still tweaking it to get it right, just because 8 got, in many people's opinions, so many things wrong. That being said, that now my first argument that I made and then refuted and then made again. My second argument is, I wonder how the world we live in now affects this with the fact that there doesn't seem to be a push to ever really have a gold release, and that you can always release updates now over broadband connections. People can download basically big packs of fixes that I see the formal release cycle as starting to slip away in so many ways. Apps on smartphones already have kind of lost it. No developer I know kind of makes a big deal out of major year version releases or something like that. Occasionally, when they want to do it for marketing, they do. But it's mostly just you get an incremental fix every couple of weeks that affects whatever problem. So for Microsoft's sake, that might be what their thought is with Windows 10. We can release it this summer, and if there are huge bugs in it, we don't have to wait until the next major release. We can, continually patch. So perhaps that's their line of thought. I would love to see it this summer, but I'm thinking September is if they want to get it right. June and July and August is if they just want to get it out.
Yeah, and there is something to what you say. I think I've heard other people report, and Microsoft has said that Windows 10 is the last named release, and from now on, it'll just be upgrades to Windows 10. I guess not exactly like the way Apple handles OS 10, which has, never moved to OS 11, which would be weird. in a way, right?
OS XI.
Well, because also it looked like OS 2, which was the old IBM Microsoft.
Yeah, that's true.
but I mean, it'd be Roman numerals, but, still. But there is something to that. On the other hand, for the last umpteen years, Microsoft has had Patch Tuesday, and so they've been doing these incremental fixes all along the way. And, like I said, Windows 7 was rock solid. Even Windows XP wasn't so bad, although it did have that lack of firewall problem until SP2.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, this was before security was really in the forefront of developers' minds. And even now, I guess, it's not really in the forefront of some developers. But in any case, what I was trying to say in the article, and apparently either I failed or the title got people so riled up that they didn't actually read the article, which wouldn't surprise me.
They just looked at it and said, this guy probably doesn't even know what a prime number is.
We're that's right, and I obviously don't. I can't recognize one on site. Especially the really long ones, the one they use for crypto. I go, yeah, it looks like a prime to me. But in any case, it's fine. People are going to say what they're going to say. And we know how the internet works and how people on the internet works. And maybe some of our people that might be dogs. Really angry dogs who learn to type.
They could all be dogs.
That's right. We just don't know.
Including your editor.
Or more likely, cats. Cats look really angry to me compared to dogs. But you're a cat person. Does your cat look angry to you?
Only when she's angry at me. But we just came back from a long trip about a week ago, and yeah, she was angry. She was happy we were back and that she wanted to lay on us quite a bit, but she was angry. You could tell.
Yeah, like, where have you been? I've been here.
Yeah. She wasn't happy about the person we had checking on her. She wasn't happy about any of that stuff.
And, oh, boy.
Yeah, very particular.
Okay, so.
Just like commenters on the internet.
That's right. So all you angry people, calm down.
Take a nap. That works for my cat.
I do think that Windows 10 build 10,122 has problems, but I am very hopeful, and quite frankly, I did not upgrade any Windows 7 devices to Windows 8, but I do plan to upgrade my Windows 8 devices to Windows 10, because I really do think Windows 10 is, if it's stable, going to be much better for me as a, as a tool, as a platform, than Windows 8, which I never did quite like. Windows 8.1 kind of addressed a few things, but not enough. Okay, moving on from that giant mess of a topic. Next week is Google I/O, May 28th, 29th. What are you hoping to see, John? I know you use Android. In fact, you didn't use an Android Wear Watch? Maybe not. You use the Pebble Watch.
as with each Google I/O in the last few years, what I would like to see is something that not only shows a little bit of refinement to the platform, and the fragmentation problem has been an issue on Android forever.
Yeah, which they deny.
Anything that could try to bring some unity to that, or maybe Google, What I would really love to see would be a Google mandate that there be an option on every Android phone to either use the stock UI or
yes.
The excuse for UI that the OEMs keep pushing to people, and a way to switch back and forth from that fluidly. That would be the top of my wish list, just because then I think Android would have a fighting chance of being a well-respected operating system and not just a, well, this phone has a good version of it, or this official build is a good version, etc. Yeah. So that would be on my Google I.O. wish list. And then, you know, some new features that we hadn't even thought to think about. You know, Apple has always been really good at saying user doesn't know what they want, we're going to tell them. I'd like Google to get into that. I'd like Google to do something where I go, gee, I never even thought how cool that would be.
Yeah. You know, I think Google actually did say around the Lollipop release time frame that they would allow less skinning on devices that had the Google stamp of approval on it. You know, basically things that could access the Google Play Store. But you're right, that never really happened. As for me, what I'd like to see is, you know, I have never, ever bought a Chrome OS device, a Chromebook or Chromebox or whatever those things are called.
Mm-hmm.
Although I find them very interesting. You know, as a person who supported the netbooks, I did not the Windows netbook, but the original, you know, Larry Ellison netbook concept or network PC concept. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really like the handheld PCs, the Microsoft release, that were very self-contained. But the lack of native apps has always bothered me, as good as web apps have become. And if they run Android apps on a Chromebook, I would be very interested. I mean, I would be willing to shell out $200 or $300 to buy a Chromebook if it could run my favorite Android apps that I've come to know and love. Especially if it allowed me to run them in a windowed, overlapping windowed system, or even a tiled one. You know, just something where I could split the screen and, you know, have a, I don't know, a Facebook client or Twitter client or Evernote or something up next to a browser. That to me would be really, really valuable. And so that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping to see something more about, you know, Android apps on Chromebooks.
Yeah, I think Google, the ball has been in Google's court now for a little while to come out and say this is what makes Android a superior platform, and I just don't think they've executed on that yet.
That said, they are the number one phone platform in the known universe.
True, but I don't think you know, you have to remember how they got there. It's not by having high-end devices that are running a very nice version. It's by having the 1 cent freebies with contract devices that most of the time when I get my hands on, I think are a piece of junk because they're slow, buggy, and annoying to use.
Yeah, they basically took over a good chunk of the old feature phone market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, after, you know, Nokia was basically forced to get out of everything except Windows Phone.
Right, right.
So, you know, there was for a while there before the Microsoft acquisition some talk at Nokia about doing some really cool things with Android, and then that all went away very quickly.
Yeah, and maybe it might come back, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. They might. There's rumors that Nokia may be getting back in the phone business.
Oh, the wonderful rumor mill.
Yeah. Okay, next conference, which I will not be at, is the Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference at WWDC, which is coming up in less than a month.
Yeah, and this is the one where a lot of questions that developers have had, and I think the general public have had, about the Apple ecosystem right now will hopefully be answered. I know the keynote will be something that I probably tune in for just to see what exactly is released this year. Last year we were kind of taken aback with a whole new programming language coming out.
Yeah.
So this year I don't think we'll see anything on that level. This is what a lot of analysts refer to as kind of the refining year if you had a major release, although iOS 7 was the major release and iOS 8 was supposed to be refining. So yeah. Who knows? Maybe iOS 9 will be really crazy. But to kind of give a quick rundown, the rumor mill has said that this is the year for split-screen multitasking on the iPad.
I really hope it's true.
Yeah, we've heard that one before. It would be great to see it. I don't exactly know how I'd use it because I've gotten really used to just flipping between apps, but I think I would probably enjoy it. There is rumors, though, that it's only going to, if it is released, it may only be on the yet-to-be-announced iPad Pro.
Mm-hmm.
So we shall see how that goes. I don't think Apple can really announce a feature and then say, it's not going to be on any of our existing devices. It might be on a device you don't know about yet.
Yeah, and speaking of the iPad Pro, which is rumored to be a 12-inch iPad, yeah, I really want one. I really do. In fact, I'm hanging on to my old iPad 2 as my only full-size iPad because I don't want to buy an Air 2 because I prefer a 12-inch iPad Pro if such a thing will be released this year.
Yep, I agree. I'm actually planning on saving the money so that if it is released, I would get one as well because there are many things that my regular-sized iPad is good for, mm-hmm. but it would be nice to have that extra screen real estate. And plus the rumor of perhaps a Bluetooth tethered stylus, which you would never have seen in the Steve Jobs era, no. but in the Tim Cook era, that would be an interesting thing to see Apple do a stylus.
Boy, it really sounds like a Surface Pro 3, doesn't it?
It kind of does. If you give it a type cover, it will be Microsoft's worst nightmare.
Wouldn't that be weird if they come out with a 12-inch iPad Pro, a Bluetooth stylus, and an Apple-branded keyboard, physical keyboard?
It would be Microsoft's worst nightmare.
Okay, what else do you expect?
But anyway, the other things that have been rumored would be a control center for OS X. So right now on the right hand of OS X, if you sweep over, you get the notification center. This would be on the left-hand side. You would get something that looks very similar to the control center that you pull up from an iOS device where you can quickly toggle on and off certain features. That I know my menu or my menu bar on OS X would very much like if I didn't have all these different things always pinned there so that I could easily turn them on and off. So it'd be nice to see in a control center. The interesting one that I thought was this idea that the San Francisco font that Apple developed for the Apple Watch may come to iOS and OS X as a way of refreshing those two platforms to have this instead of using Helvetica, which is what they're currently using in iOS, and I forget what the default font in OS X is, but basically to use the San Francisco font, which was developed in-house. The only problem there is that there are reports that it looks pretty choppy on a non-Retina display, so that would be interesting to see. And then yeah. Apple Watch stuff, do you want to talk about...
I just wanted to say something about the font. You know, it sounds like a minor thing, but having been forced to change fonts in the past, I forget where, I think it was on Windows maybe, or maybe not font, but, you know, going to like TrueType or something, it can be really jarring to have your, you know, the display you've been working on for the past year or two or three or whatever, all of a sudden look different. It might be subtle, but it's still different, and it is a jarring kind of user experience to have a default typeface changed on you.
I never knew you were so upset over TrueType.
Well, you know, in the old days, TrueType was supposed to make things clearer, right? Nicer to read and, you know, anti-alias better. But the truth is, in the early displays that were available then, it looked fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember those days. I didn't have the big chip on my shoulder from it, apparently. So. But, I apologize on behalf of the TrueType world.
But, you know, as time went on, displays got better and Microsoft got better at implementing TrueType. You know, it started to look normal, but it did take a year or two before things started to look okay, to me at least. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway, you're saying about the complications or something like that?
Well, yeah, Apple Watch is obviously the product that everyone is very interested in knowing what's going on with because we've had it out in the wild now for over a month and we still have some peculiarities to it. One of those being we have nothing on native apps, although we've been promised that could be happening, so it'd be nice to see that at WWDC. Mm-hmm. This week, rumors came out about third-party complications. Complications are those little things that exist on watch faces, and I think some would love to see that because that would allow a little bit of background updating. There has to be some logic that works to update those in the background, so it would be the closest the Apple Watch gets to background refresh at this point. And what I would love to see, but I haven't even heard anything in the rumor mill on, would be third-party watch faces.
Yeah, that's what everybody wants.
Yeah, it seems like a very logical thing for Apple to be, even if it's not, you know, let me buy them from other people yet, just give me some more options than these nine that I've kind of been stuck with so far. Mm.
So, oh, you poor thing. You only have 9 watch faces.
I know. I only have 9, and I really only like one. That's the problem.
How are you and Carrie enjoying your Apple Watches, by the way?
We're doing well with them. Carrie is still figuring out exactly how it fits into her life. I'm more or less happy with mine because I wasn't expecting, you know, a huge amount. The battery life is awesome on both of them.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Routinely makes it to about, I think, 30 to 40 at night. Mine can be even as high as 50 or 60 after a day.
And that's because you have the larger Apple Watch with the larger battery. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Probably.
It could be how you use it versus carry and all that kind of stuff, too. But, yeah, a lot of factors, I guess. Okay. So, yeah. Lots to look forward to. I really, really, really hope that even if Apple doesn't announce the iPad Pro, that they introduce split screen. Although my gut instinct is that my iPad 2 will be left out of picture. I think if I had to guess, iOS 8 is going to be the last major numbered release that will be compatible with the iPad 2. It's a really old device. I'm surprised it was supported for iOS 8.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I saw a rumor today.
Yeah.
Or yesterday, that was saying that the new version of iOS may extend back to the A5 chips, which are in the iPad 2.
Oh, that's
so you might still get another upgrade out of it.
You know, the iPad 2 is the best value device Apple has ever released, in my opinion. I mean, how old is that thing now? It was released in, what, 2011?
Yeah, 2011.
It's 4 years old now.
And it's still for sale. You can still pick one up. You can get them cheaper, too.
And, you know, I have absolutely no complaints about it in terms of speed. I think it runs as fast as it needs to run for the things I do. You know, it still supports the latest version of iOS 8. It's just a rock-solid platform. If anything, it's probably Apple's biggest sales problem for iPads. Because people like me say, well, my iPad 2 works fine after 4 years. Do I really need to upgrade?
Yeah, well, I assume eventually you will. I mean, how long can the battery last in those things anyway?
Pretty well, actually, so far. Better than my iPhone batteries have lasted, you know, in similar time frames.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing device. And if I had to name the greatest Apple product of the 21st century, I'd say the iPad 2 is my pick. Not the iPod. Not even, you know, the iPhone. The iPad 2 is greatest in terms of being the most reliable and cost-effective purchase I've made. I mean, I've had to buy a phone every 2 years.
But your iPad 2 stays faithfully by you.
That's right. Okay, and speaking of tablet-like devices, next up is the Microsoft Surface 3. No Pro. Let's call it the Microsoft Surface Amateur 3.
Yeah, Surface Amateur 3.
There we go. So you seem kind of high on that.
Well, I was interested in... I'm confused by it more than anything. I like that it's at a lower price point.
And what does it start at?
It's around $499. Yeah. The thing that kind of confuses me, first of all, there's only one feature it has that the Surface Pro 3 doesn't have, and that is the ability to get LTE data.
Right.
So if you are a road warrior, you may want the Surface Amateur 3 just to be able to connect straight to a data connection instead of having to go through your phone.
Right.
But that being said, I guess my question is there a group of people out there other than those who want just LTE, that want a cheaper version of the Surface 3? Or are, you know, Surface has always been poised as a laptop replacement.
Right.
It's a bit pricey for a tablet, but not too pricey for a decent laptop.
Right.
The Pro 3. So especially if you consider it a laptop replacement device where you truly are getting 2-in-1.
Yeah.
It would seem to me like you would want the Surface Pro 3 much more than the Surface Amateur 3.
Yeah, and in fact, we have some friends, mutual friends, who are using the Surface Pro 3 as their desktop. I mean, they plug it into a dock and have a big screen and a external keyboard, and off they go. And then when they need to run around, they undock it and haul it around with them.
Sounds very similar to what I do with my MacBook already, but, you know.
Yeah, but it is lighter.
Yeah, that is true.
It is lighter. Now, the other difference is that the Surface Pro 3 has a 12-inch display, while the Surface 3 has a 10-inch display like the previous Pro devices, which are also 10-inch devices. You know, I was at this Costco carries a Surface Pro 3 now. And so I was at Costco just yesterday. I was up looking at the Surface Pro 3, the 12-inch display. I'm thinking, you know, and I have an Asus 10-inch a Windows 8 device, I'm thinking, you know, that 2-inch difference in the display is significant. And I think that if you're using this as a notebook replacement, in other words, you're going to be sitting in a hotel room or, you know, even sitting in the office and you don't have an external display for one reason or another, if that's your use case, then the Surface Pro 3 makes a lot more sense. But personally, at almost half the price, if I were in the market for a hybrid type device, I would go with the smaller Surface 3.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's very competitive cost wise, I think it costs maybe $100 more than what I paid for my Asus T100. It's got a lot more features than my T100 does in terms of better touch experience and that sort of thing, and it's faster. I think what is used? Oh, and maybe it's not faster. Is it using an i5, i3? I can't remember now.
It's using an Atom.
It's Atom. Okay, so it's not necessarily faster. And that's the other difference between the Pro and the Amateur is that you get the i3, i5, i7 experience in the Pro 3.
And I do think the 2-inch thing, it sounds so trivial, but I know I felt much more able to get work done when I went from the 11-inch MacBook Air to the 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah, and in fact, I have the 11-inch MacBook Air that, the second generation, the good one, as I call it. And when it was time for my daughter to replace her Mac to go to college, as much as it's light and easy to carry, if it's going to be your only computer, we got her to 13-inch because it's just that 2-inch display difference is huge in terms of readability and, reduction of eye strain and that sort of thing if you've been using it for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that said, if I were spending my own hard-earned money, I wouldn't mind spending it on the Surface Amateur 3 with its 10-inch display and Atom processor.
I think we both decided, though, that if we're going to be spending any more hard-earned money this year, it will be on an iPad Pro.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm a little bit afraid of how much it's going to cost. I'm thinking starting at $599 without LTE.
That would be wonderful. I'm thinking probably more like $699.
Okay, and I'm not going to argue with you there because originally I was thinking $799 and thought, no, that's way too high.
Well, of course, the Apple Watch, the analyst predictions there were crazy. It was, $350 is going to be the low end. It's going to look like junk. You're going to hate it.
Right.
And anything in the stainless steel is going to be $1,000 or more.
Right.
So they were – we know that Apple pricing is not an easy thing to guess, except pricing. iPhone pricing will always probably be pretty easy to guess on contract.
Although, as you might recall, before the first iPhone came out, the estimates were going to be a $1,000 phone. Now, it wasn't too far off. But, I'm sorry, it wasn't the iPhone, it was the iPad. Remember the iPad? Everybody said it was going to be $1,000, and it came out entry-level $499.
Yeah, I do recall
that.
So,
they do go under. Yeah, you're right. Well, okay, so...
The other thing for WWDC that we didn't mention is Apple's, child of the whole group, the Apple TV, might be getting some interesting new features.
Ah.
There have been rumors saying that apps might be coming to the Apple TV and other random things with the hardware refresh. So that's another thing to look for if you're an Apple TV user.
Right. Oh, but if it comes, it probably won't come to the earlier versions, right? It'd be the current version of Apple TV and maybe whatever. Because I know I have the first, tiny black box Apple TV, the first good Apple TV.
Yeah, and I have the second gen of that, and then there's a third gen of that.
Right, and I think the third gen can have channels or, Apple's internally released apps that mine doesn't for some reason. So,
It wouldn't surprise me if the older ones get the streaming service that Apple is rumored to be putting together.
Yeah.
This whole idea that for $20 a month or something like that, you would get streaming television stations, which, if Apple can pull that off this year, would be huge.
And didn't Apple just reduce the price of the current Apple TV to something like $69 from $99?
Yeah, and that was seen not as a, we're blowing out our inventory, because Apple keeps very little inventory generally anyway, but it was seen as kind of a, this is going to be the new price point for the Apple TV.
Yeah.
So.
And speaking of new price point, which I assume that is in reaction to things like the Chromecast and Fire Stick and that sort of thing, my Fire Stick stopped working. My Amazon Fire Stick, by stop working, I mean it turns on and everything, but it will no longer connect to the Amazon service. Won't let me log in.
Self-immolate or anything like that?
I don't know what it's doing. But I unplugged it and plugged Apple TV back in. Yeah.
Well, that's annoying.
It is. And maybe I'll just plug it in. Maybe it needed a rest, you know, and I'll plug it back in and it'll reconnect to my Amazon account. But anyway, that was kind of annoying, definitely.
Well, my Apple TV gets this weird thing where occasionally when my my HD TV goes to connect to it through the HDMI, it doesn't activate properly the video channel. So I have to reboot the Apple TV, which is kind of annoying. But
yeah, and also doesn't the Apple TV also cause a problem with Wi-Fi connectivity on Macs?
I haven't seen that.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Apparently, if you have an Apple TV and an AirPort Express and a Mac, the Apple TV actually causes some kind of Wi-Fi interference because of the way Bonjour or something like that works.
That's interesting. I don't have an AirPort Express, but I have a Time Capsule that is my home router as well, and I haven't had any problem with that.
Okay. Alrighty, so that was Mobile Views Podcast number 117. I'm Todd Agosawa, John Westfall. Let's see, what did we go over? Right, a firestorm of comments over my Microsoft Windows 10 article. Hope folks calm down about it and actually read the article versus just the title, which, you know, is a little bit emotional, shall we say. Google I.O., we're looking for that next week. Apple WWDC, what's that, 2 weeks after that, mid-June? And the Microsoft Surface Amateur 3, which I think John and I both give a thumbs up to, having not actually owned it ourselves, but sure looks like a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, that is it for Mobile Views Podcast 117. We'll talk to you next time.